Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 20, Ferengi Love Songs, teleplay by Iris Stephen-Bear and Hans Beimler, and directed by Renee Auberjonois. Ferengi Love Songs aired on April 21st, 1997.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Quark discovers that his mother and Grand Nega Zek have fallen in love with each other. Also, Rom and Lita's relationship hits a rocky patch. All right, so we'll start this episode where we start most of our episodes, Elise. Did you or did you not remember this one?
I vaguely recalled this episode in so far that I knew that Ishka and Zek had a romance. I didn't really remember the specifics on how that was found out or what happened in the rest of the episode.
Did you remember the Rom and Lita, the weddings on, the weddings off, other plot?
I didn't remember that. I would say I also remembered that at one point the Zek like was losing his memory, but I didn't even remember that that was part of the same episode as the romance.
Yeah, it's this parts of this episode actually kind of reminded me of the line from the first My Big Fat Greek Wedding movie, where it's like, I think it actually might be Andrew Martin's character.
That's really ironic, actually.
He says that the man may be the head of... Yeah, exactly, right? That the man may be the, like, head of the family, mm-hmm. but the woman's the neck and can turn the head any way she wants,
yep.
or whatever.
Yeah, that is from the first
Ishka,
one.
The mm-hmm. Ishka and Zek relationship.
Yes, and some of you may remember that Andrea Martin played Ishka in the first episode that she showed up in, but she was very uncomfortable in all the prosthetics, so she decided not to come back for the role. So Cecily Adams plays Ishka now and does for the rest of the series.
Who tragically, died of cancer. Oh. Like, not that long after the series ended. She's also Don Adams' daughter.
Oh, I didn't know that.
From Get Smart fame. And
yes,
then
I love Get
she
Smart.
She was married to, from Deadwood, what was his name?
The main guy?
No, not Timothy Oliphant. It was a...
That's not who I was thinking was the main guy.
Oh, you're thinking McShane? No. Yeah, Jim Beaver.
I don't know who that is.
Jim Beaver's also on Supernatural, and there's an episode where they're talking about, oh, don't you like Star Trek? Or I was like, I only watched Deep Space Nine, and it's a reference to his wife who died but was on Deep Space Nine, so...
Yeah, actually, I do. This guy does look familiar. It's funny that you said Timothy Oliphant, because I know this guy from Justified, which also has Timothy Oliphant in it. Yeah. But I've never seen Deadwood, so.
Yeah. Yeah, Cecily Adams tragically died in 2004. So just like, 5 years after the show ended?
So something really amusing about this episode is that the working title was How Quark Acquired His Groove Back. And then there was like another later title called Of Love and Profit. I think Ferengi Love Songs is a very funny title. How Quark Acquired His Groove Back is probably too on the nose.
Yeah, and also like, I don't know. Is that problematic or not? Because of the whole, like, how Stella got her groove back being, you know, a story about a black character.
I don't think so.
It's probably best that they land. Yeah.
Because, like, that, how Stella got her groove back. I am a white person, but that movie, the characters are black in that movie, and it's very much a black movie. But I feel like her trying to get back out there is like such a universal experience, so it doesn't feel like it's a problem to me personally.
Yeah, no, fair enough. All right. I know we talk about this a lot.
What?
But especially when we go into like the production quotes, but it's like, even though I disagree with Ira about, you know, ongoing genocides in the Middle East, I do enjoy how much of, like, a cinephile Iris Stephen-Bear is.
Yes.
And how he tries to bring that into Deep Space Nine all the time.
Yeah, so, for example, he said that the tone of this episode was supposed to be close to, like, or similar to that of, like, bringing a baby, like, very silly, someone getting caught up in someone else's nonsense. But he felt at the end of this episode that Zach was maybe a bit too much, like, once they edited the episode all together. So, like, when they were doing the dailies, it seemed fine, like, and I kind of don't agree with him on this. I think that Zach is very entertaining in this episode. And actually, Renee, who directed the episode, and Armin and Wallace Shawn all were, like, really into what they were doing with Zach. Like, Wallace Shawn was really amused that Zach was, like, forgetting things and having to, like, bullshit his way through, like, negotiations and stuff. Like, that is very funny.
Yeah, Wallace Shawn, who I do agree with about all the sides. Wallace Shawn, yes. Socialist king.
Yes, we loved Wallace.
Not to pit the diaspora against each other on the podcast, but
yes, I do appreciate that. We, it's like, it's hard.
It really is. As a Gentile, let me tell you about how hard it is to be a member of the community, of the tribe these days. Sean does a great job, and, like, I do think on one level a lot of the comedy works, and I can see how it would be really fun to play. I could also see in, like, where dementia is also not super funny too, like, they're playing it for laughs, and I think within the heightened reality of the episode it works, but I can see how if, you know, it's one of those days where you have, like, familiar, like, experience with Alzheimer's or dementia or things like that, how it could hit differently. But again, I don't know if that's inherently the episode's problem, and I don't know if it necessarily would be played the same way today. But, yeah, it's an interesting conversation. But, yeah, I laughed admittedly, so.
I didn't think of it that way. Like, it didn't occur to me that it could be, like, making fun of, like, someone who's actually really ill.
I mean, I don't think it's intentionally
doing
that.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying it didn't occur to me. I just kind of, it reminded me of, like, because, you know, my parents are in their early 70s, and, like, they forget things now and again, and it just kind of made me think of that.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly it. Where, like, I don't, like I said, it definitely works, and I don't think it's necessarily that, but, like, I could see someone having that perspective on it. But again, it doesn't, good, bad, or, like, indifferent, right? So
totally.
It is what it is, and I appreciate it, and I laughed, and, like, if someone had a criticism of it, I could totally see it. I don't know if I'd, like, totally agree, but, you know, I just wanted to acknowledge that, right?
Totally. Do you want to get into the B plot?
Yeah, let's do it. Just an old-fashioned love song.
So we find the episode starts with Quark being, like, really depressed that his bar has a vole infestation. It was really funny. I kind of, like, assumed it was vole-related when they were, even though I didn't remember. And Rom comes in, and he's so excited. And he's like, I have some news that'll cheer you up. And I'm just like, Rom, you don't know your brother at all. And it's just delightful. So Rom tells Quark that he and Leetah are getting married. We last saw them when they were admitting their feelings. And she almost went off with Robert Picardo. And I love Rom, and I just love that he is, like, thinking this news is going to just, like, cheer Quark up. It's just very sweet.
I like, too, how, like, the way that the episode starts, you're like, oh my god, what's going on in the station? Is the Dominion attacked? Like, blah, blah, like it's all, like, giving, like, you know, war movie and fog of war and the phasers going off, and then you pan back and find out that it's the war against the Voles that have shut down Quark.
Yes. That's really funny. We see Rom, and he's wearing a Bajoran earring, and I just love that he's so excited about doing all these Bajoran things for Leetah. And then Dax and O'Brien basically ruin it for Rom and for me. Rom is so impressionable. You have to be really careful what you say to him. like, the way that Dax tells him that he's not, like, your average Ferengi, he, like, takes it negatively, and she means it positively. So he's just like, oh, I have to screw Leeta over now, basically. Like, he wants her to give up all his money and sign, like, a waiver of property and profit, which they, I love that they keep calling it the WP&P. It's like,
yeah.
So funny.
Rom, our impressionable neurodivergent Aries angel, you have to be careful what you say to him.
I know. He's so he's so easily influenced. I do love that, like, he thinks that this waiver is equivalent to wearing the Bajoran earring and having, like, a Bajoran wedding. And I'm like, you're asking her to give up all of her money to you? And that is not the same as wearing a piece of jewelry. Like, what are you talking about? I do love that O'Brien is just like, this is a really bad idea. Like, what are you doing? I love Chase Masterson as Leeta because she is so outspoken about her views. Bajoran women aren't, I'm going to make a generalization, but they're, like, really, the ones that we've met are, like, really direct in saying how they feel about things, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
Except when you're manipulative like Kaiwyn, but that's a different thing. So she immediately, like, I'm not going to sign this. And then he was like, women and profit don't mix. And she's like, that's a stupid rule. And I'm like, the way she said that's a stupid rule made me think of how, like, Melissa would have said that's a stupid rule. Like, I just heard it in her. Leeta, to me, like, just reminds me of Melissa sometimes. Our editor, for those, if you're tuning in for the first time. And I just really enjoy this. Rom just gets so confused. He thinks Leeta's going to be, like, his ex-wife. And he just calls the wedding off.
Again, I know that this episode is playing, like, in the farce and, like, comedy space. But I do think the way Rom reacts here does ring fairly true to life to me. The way in which, like, our past traumas can be activated in those states of, like, heightened emotions like this. Our bodies remember those feelings, and then we can jump to conclusions that may or may not be real and draw equivalencies where none objectively or whatever do exist, and situations can be different. But it's like, oh no, you're just like, you know, my ex, blah blah blah, and then that creates the discord. Like, that happens all the time, right?
Yeah. Yep. It's very clear after this that neither of them are happy that they've broken off the engagement. Rom is just working and crying and claiming that it's happy tears. And we get a scene where Leeta is, like, chatting, more like chatting at Kira, actually, than chatting with Kira about Rom. And I really enjoy this. Like, we don't get to see them together that often. But I love, like, Kira just basically, like, you're making a mistake. Everyone knows that Rom and Leeta are meant to be. Like, and they're just like, what are you people doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I do also kind of like the whole, I can just see it in the writer's room where it's like, we need someone for Leeta to say how she's feeling to. But we really only have put her with Bashir, which would be weird because that's an ex, or maybe weird. And then we just have her with the Ferengi, but, like, Rom's her guy. Who can we have as a scene partner? Let her talk to Kira. They're both Bajoran. They're probably friends.
I know. I do think that's really funny, but also I do want them to be friends because I like both of them.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Next, Rom is, like, thinking about, this is so funny, he wants to bribe Leeta by, like, being like, I'll bribe you with all this money, and then you'll sign the paper. And O'Brien's like, but then she'd have to give you all the money back because she signed the paper. And Rom, like, the fact that that didn't occur to Rom is very funny to me. Because he, like, it is not a traditional Ferengi. Like, he doesn't care about profits. And this has all been, like, him acting how he thinks he's supposed to act, not him acting like he wants to be acting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I do love when O'Brien says, do you want Leeta back or not? And he goes, I'd do anything to hold her in my arms again.
Aww.
I really like how this got wrapped up because, you know, Rom is like works on the station, which is probably giving him room and board, you know, for his part of his job. And Lita has her her salary from Quark. So he donates all of his latinum to the Bajoran War Orphans Fund. And they're just going to like live in his quarters and have her salary and just be really cute together forever.
Yeah, there's no profit for Lita to, you know, lust after and or steal from Rom if there's no life savings.
Yes.
It's a very creative solution.
Yes. And it definitely works out for them. I'm not going to do a spoiler on what happens, but I will say that they showed up on season 4 of Lower Decks, and I was very happy about that. Are you watching the new season of Lower Decks?
No, I haven't. I kind of keep forgetting that it's on, to be honest. I need to catch up, find it somewhere to watch it. I don't know if it's... because I don't have Paramount Plus, but like sometimes it was airing on... I could watch it on the like CTV.
Yeah, they keep like just like moving it around in other countries. It's so fucking weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll
get to it eventually.
I will say, speaking of Lower Decks, last month they came out with a new graphic novel that's like a choose your own adventure. I think it's called Warp Your Own Way or something like that. And I bought it, but I haven't started it yet.
Own way.
Exactly. I haven't started it yet. But like I was looking through and like the first choice is like coffee or Rectigino. And so then it tells you like go to page whatever. And I have heard that you can get caught in a loop, which is fun. So I'm really excited to get through, to get like into that. But in addition to that, and this is written by Ryan North, who wrote the comic that came out last year that was like a fun, like Hollow Sweet Dracula thing that happened. Nice. They like Dracula like gets lost, like is like on the Cerritos or whatever, but they're now doing a new monthly ongoing series. So I the first one came out November 13th, so this week, so I read that as well, so I'm gonna keep up with that. Oh my god, Siri, my phone thought, my speaker thought I was talking to her just now when I wasn't. But yeah, so that has been fun. That's just like a short issue and I have to wait a month. This is my first time ever like reading a comic like as it comes out.
Like a subscription?
Yeah. I didn't technically subscribe to it, but my roommate subscribed to it at his comic book shop and I'll just like pay him whenever it comes out.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm excited. Comics.
Lower Decks.
Yeah, I was chanting that the other day like a dork, and it was great. Do you want to get to Quark?
Yeah, let's do it. Sorry, I was just looking up my local comic book shop, and I think they have that graphic novel in stock. So I guess I'm
the Choose Your Own Adventure one.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you read?
I haven't picked up my X-Men issue from this week.
Did you read the? It was like a three or four issue thing that came out last year, but I have it in the little.
No, I have it. The holodeck one. No, I haven't.
It's really fun. The issue that came out this week does mention one little thing that happened in that, but it's not like a requirement to, like, cause you know, I don't, have you read a bunch of Ryan North? Like he often writes like comments in the margins.
That's like that's a kind of an editor's note that's quite common across the
media. Yeah, but I'm obsessed with him doing it. Like it's really great. He did it in Squirrel Girl too, which was really great. There was a joke about a movie I love in there. Like it's just really cute and clever, and like it teases Star Trek a little bit too, which I love.
Nice.
Yeah. It feels really much on tone with like the show Lower Decks, but yeah, definitely check it out. It's great. So as we mentioned earlier, Quark super depressed, bar infested with voles, and he goes home to wallow to his mommy per Rom's suggestion, and he says he hates his life. It's very sad. immediately when we get to Ferenginar, it's raining, and I was watching this episode with AJ like last week, and he was like, does it ever not rain on Ferenginar? And I don't think it ever not, like, it's always raining there.
Well, yeah, because it's like, the Ferengi love it when the news is bad. Why does it feel so good to feel so sad? They're only happy when it rains. Quark just wants to pour that misery down.
Oh my gosh.
Pour your misery down on me. Garbage. Only happy when it rains.
I saw them open for Alanis Morissette 2 years ago. It was great.
That was what, the perimenopause tour?
That's terrible.
Moogie, who is a woman of a certain age in Ferenginar, is ready to hold her son. Quark has a complicated relationship with his mother, but right now he just wants a hug from his mommy, which I think is kind of cute.
It is really cute, and it's really funny, though, because he, like, doesn't ask his mom if he can come stay with her. He just shows up and then announces that he's going to live there. And then his mom's kind of like, wait, why are you here? And then he's like, and then he's like, wait, you're going to live here? Like, how long? This scene kind of reminded me of, like, the Royal Tenenbaums when all of the, like, kids move back in with Angelica Houston because they're depressed.
Mm, yeah,
exactly. I love when Margot Gwyneth Paltrow is like, how come Chaz got to move back home? And like, Angelica Houston's character is just like, you know, what says whatever. And she was just like, I didn't know that was an option. And then the next scene, you see her, like, moving back home. It's great.
Oh, man. It's been a while since I've seen that movie. I should really rewatch
it. I rewatched it this year, and it's still one of my favorites. That's actually the spoilers. I'm not going to say what the joke is, but that's the movie that Ryan North made a joke about in the first issue of the new Lower Decks comic as well.
Oh, it's all coming up. It's all coming up. It's all linked. It's time is a flat circle.
Quark goes and stays in his childhood bedroom, and there's, like, no decor, completely empty. I don't remember what he called his action figures, but he's like, I hope my action figures...
I hope
Moogie didn't get rid of my Marauder Moe action figure. I kind of absolutely am obsessed with... I don't know how you can be kind of absolutely obsessed with, but that's what came out of my mouth. I am obsessed with Quark, like, giving in to his inner child and coming and staying at his mommy's house. Like, sometimes you just need to be cared for, and I think that Quark needs to be cared for in this moment. But we have a very funny scene where he opens his closet to put his travel bag, and hands it. He thinks he's, like, putting it on, like, a hook or something, but he ends up handing it to the Grand Nagus. And the Grand Nagus and Meherdu are, like, in his closet, and, like, the door closes behind him. And then he was like, wait a second. What's the Nagus doing in my closet?
It's such a good bit. I love the delayed reaction. Yes. Where it's like, he opens the closet, hands the bag to Zach, takes the bag, closes the door. It's like, wait. And then, like, goes in, and Zek's giving him shit for why he shouldn't be on Ferenginar. So he's like, I gotta leave. And then he's talking to movies. Like, Zek said I had to leave. He's like, wait. It just was so good.
Yeah, it was a really great... I love a delayed reaction scene. Like, they usually really work for me. I also felt like you said the word bag like I do. And I didn't know if that was intentional. Yeah. Sometimes you tease me about how I say things. So I wasn't sure.
Like a bag?
I don't know. Bag? I think you said bag. Like, I love that the idea that Zek and Moogie are, like, romantically linked does not even come up on the list of reasons why the Grand Nagus would be at their house. He immediately thinks that Moogie is in trouble. But we find out how we find out they're meet cute. And so the Nagus admits they're in love, and apparently they met at a gaming tournament because he was losing and she was secretly, like, writing notes to him on what his strategy should be, and he thanked her, and, like, he didn't know it was her, like, sending him the notes, which I think is really funny. like, he thought it was a man sending him this information. And eventually he thanked her, and they started regularly writing to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a couple questions. So first off, I mean, that's very progressive of the Tongo tournament to have a women's division in the sub basement or wherever it is. I just wondered, did Moogie have to disrobe to participate in public? I'm assuming so.
Probably.
She's probably code switching or something there. But also, did Moogie kind of catfish Zek? And yeah. Zek was super into it and, like, falling in love with her before he realized that she was a woman. So it's like, again, are all Ferengi just queer?
I think so. Yes, I am.
It's like the Quark and Pell thing.
Yes. Pell.
They're as misogynistic as white cis gays. Oops, did I say that out loud?
Yeah. Oh my god. I was just someone I follow on Instagram that's white and I think cis and gay, but like has good politics. It's like, people were joking about him, like saying if he said some sort of like conservative nonsense, he'd be like the first to be like picked up on like the news, and they'd be like, even the white gays are with us. Because some of them really do have really bad opinions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on here with this story. Like, at first, Quark thinks this is going to be...
levels.
Yeah, first, Quark thinks this is going to be great. He's like, oh, if this ex's banging my mom, maybe I can get my business license back. But, of course, to put a wrench in everything, Brunt shows up. Also in Quark's closet. I just love the idea that people are like... that Brunt is, like, transporting directly into Quark's closet. I find it really funny. Like, you would almost never be caught cheating because you can just put people in the closet and transport them out. Brunt convinces Quark to turn the Zek against his mother so that he can get his business license back. And also because he thinks that Quark's mom's gonna ruin the country, the planet, and the economy because of her progressive views.
This is what, when Zek just believes Quark innately, this is what we in the business like to call pulling a Ron.
That's really funny. The way that Quark whines to his mom about not being able to earn profit is very funny because it's just like, he's completely oblivious to the fact that her entire gender can not earn profit. So, like, he doesn't see women as people, basically, in this scene. It's like when you're complaining to someone that, like, has it worse off than you, really.
Yeah.
Quark stupidly is, like, playing both sides... like, playing with, like, his mom, but also Brunt is, like, kind of working against Quark in this episode because...
yeah.
He convinces his mom eventually, or manipulates Ishka into talking to Zek on his behalf about the getting his license back. But because he had earlier told Zek all this, like, rumor and innuendo about his mom earning profit and keeping all the money, Zek ends up just breaking up with Ishka, and now Ishka's miserable, and it's really upsetting.
Yeah, yeah. Quark, like, basically sets them both up, right? Because it's like, oh, if I get her to ask Zek about my license, Zek's gonna be like, oh yeah, Quark was right that she's trying to convince.
Exactly.
And then it all blows.
Exactly.
Up.
Exactly. And part of and like, so Quark gets his business license back, but like, Moogie is so depressed, and Quark is so shitty to her about it, I think. And the problem is that Zek has been losing his memory, and Ishka's been basically helping him run the planet and the economy, and, like, telling Zek what to do. And now that they're broken up, Zek is making some bad choices, and Quark has to deal with that and try to help him. But he's not as good at it as his mom is. He won't stroke Zek's lobes to help him focus.
No, exactly. And then Quark basically does the Arrested Development thing where it's like, I've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, he really does. And Ishka's really smart. She finds it. She kind of figures out that Quark is the one who, like, turns Zek against her. And then he has to admit to his mom that Brent put him up to it to get his business license back. And Ishka's like, you may have just, like, you may be responsible for the destruction of the entire Ferengi economy. Although, oops. I do think that this is really funny, given that, like, part of the reason why Joe Biden didn't end up running for president in this last election was because everyone was like, he's a doddering old man that can't remember shit. And I'm laughing, and it makes, I mean, obviously, I don't even want to talk about the election, but it makes me laugh that the Fring in our culture is going to keep that person that doesn't know what the fuck is going on in charge. Like, that feels like the ultimate thing that would happen on Ferenginar.
So obviously we're that's all, folks. Quark is clued in to the idea that he was a pawn for Brunt's palace coup to make himself Grand Nagus. And I do find the idea and the distinction about how the Nagus's personal greed needs to be a reflection of the public's greed, and the idea of this kind of sort of representative democracy,
yes,
type thing, right? Where it's like Brent just wants to personally enrich himself, but that doesn't reflect enriching everyone.
Yes.
An interesting kind of political theory line there, that thread that you could pull on for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was interesting as well. I also kind of thought it was interesting that it's very clear that Quark helped the Nagus, like, get his power back, but we don't actually see that scene happen.
Yeah.
They're just like cheering about it afterwards, and I'm curious if that scene was written and cut, or if they just like were like, we don't need to show that, we could just show them celebrating afterwards.
Yeah.
Zek does finally admit that his memory is going, and Quark suggests that he go to a Vulcan doctor for memory loss. But he still wants Quark to work for him, and Quark does not want to do this. So he admits to Zek that Ishka is the person that advised him on all the things that he advised Zek on. Yeah. So, meaning it'd be better if she was his, like, financial advisor or whatever, the first, whatever that
first
role
was. Clerk or
first
whatever.
Clerk, yeah, yeah, thanks. I couldn't remember that. I do think that Ishka could... I do enjoy Ishka and Zek together. Like, it's fun, and there's no progressive Ferengis except for Rom, really. And that's her son, so she cannot, you know, be with her son. So I do feel, like, really strongly that Ishka needs to find a better boyfriend. But they're very cute, like, in how they interact with each other. There's that scene where Ishka tells Zek, like, I believe in equal rights for females and hope that you do eventually. And I just feel like that doesn't... I don't know how that hit in 1997, but in 2024, that feels very, like, no. If someone didn't believe in equal rights, like, I wouldn't talk to them. You know what I mean? And I feel like Ishka in 2024 wouldn't talk to them either.
She's a missionary dating across the aisle.
So Zek and Ishka get back together. And Quark's mom saved his Marauder Moe figurines.
Amazing. And I really like the idea of, like, he's like, of course I want to keep them and take them back. Do you know how much these are worth? And she's like, not as much as we kept them in the original packaging, which is such a great, like, Star Trek collector joke for the toys.
Yeah.
Turns out some of them aren't worth as much money as I thought they would be in the 90s.
I do really like that line, too. It gave me a good giggle, because I feel like whenever anyone collects anything, or like you did as a child, like, there was always debate over whether it was worth opening the packaging or not. And just...
But, like, at the end of the day, it's a toy. Toys are meant to be played with, right?
Yeah. I have a bunch of Funko Pops that are still in their boxes, and it's just for lack of space to put them, not for posterity, not for, like, preserving them. But I do have my Angela Lansbury one out. She's holding a purse and a flashlight.
Nice.
It's really cute. And, of course, Brunt loses, which is always fun. Sorry, Brunt FCA loses.
All right. Now it's time for the Alter Water Thirst Quencher. Alter Water first being mentioned in Star Trek by Dr. McCoy in Star Trek 3. Possible reference to Alta from Alter 4 and Forbidden Planet. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
I think Ishka and Zeki. Yes, I'm calling him Zeki. Are hot. I am also into how severely uncomfortable their love makes Quark. At the end of this episode, Zek says to her, "What am I going to do with you?" And she says, "Anything you want." And that is one of the hottest things that's ever been said in this show.
And shout out to the idea of, or not the idea, just the concept of seeing folks of a certain age being romantic and, like, yeah, sexual beings on television, even if they are Ferengi.
It's great. I don't think we've ever seen two as wrinkly people being embracing before. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say that I heard news yesterday that they are, or this week rather, that Brian K. Vaughan is in talks to potentially do a Forbidden Planet remake. And
oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know that needs to be something that is made, but I still think that everyone should watch the original Forbidden Planet. Leslie Nielsen is in it, and I forget the name of the woman that stars in it. She was in an episode of a Hitchcock or a Twilight Zone episode I watched last week. Anne Francis plays Alta in Forbidden Planet.
In the OG?
Yeah. So she was in an episode of TV I was watching recently. She's adorable. But yeah, interesting. Forbidden Planet news. We'll see what happens.
Now it's time for the most Star Trek thing. Elise, who's your candidate for the most Star Trek thing? Or what is your candidate, I should say, for the most Star Trek thing about the episode?
I don't know if this is, like, the most Star Trek thing, but sometimes when I can't think of anything, I just think of something that amused me heavily from the episode. And in this episode, it's just, from now on, like, Brunt introducing himself as Brunt FCA, like, every time we see him, is just really, really funny. Like, he introduced himself as Brunt FCA twice to Quark within the same episode. that really got me. I was laughing a lot.
Yeah. And as always, in a related note, my most Star Trek thing is a Jeffrey Combs character.
Oh, totally. Love it. I'm so happy whenever he's there.
Yeah. Me too. Well, Elise, until next time, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find links to my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z. Next week, I am recording an episode of our friend Lazzy's podcast, Asimov Cast. We're talking about a couple short stories that might be out by the time this gets released. So again, that's Asimov Cast, and if it's not out yet, it should be soon.
Awesome. You can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd as well at Matty Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at Pod Wraiths, and you can email us at podwraiths@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.